Bessler.
You're looking fetching, as usual.
Oh! Okay, wow.
It's because of you my son can't walk properly and has a messed up face.
He stole my angry leg. Just took it.
Yeah. So you are going to look after him while I'm at work? Make sure he has a job and feels included. Got it?
Got it. Yeah, really got it.
Good.
Guys, this is Johannes Bessler. The kid I told you about. Remember, he stole a hand grenade and blew himself up, and as a result, I got demoted for negligence. Now I get to work in his office with all these wonderful kids.
Recognize those voices? That's a scene from a very popular movie. And it's on one of our top 10 lists, and that's what we're going to do on Sitting Around Talking Movies podcast today, is I'm joined by Bill Bregoli, as always.
That's right.
Bill McCuddy. And
ta-da.
I'm Neil Rosen, and that's what we're doing, the best and worst of 2019.
And that scene is our number one.
One of our
it's
number
either
one.
Your number one or yes, my number one or Bill's number
so
one.
So we're teasing it. This is you gotta.
We're learning new things here. That's called a tease.
That's right. Or you could fast forward the podcast.
Ooh. No, that's cheating.
No.
But
no.
We're gonna tell you some of our. We're gonna give you our top 10 lists of the year. And we're going to tell you some of our worst films of the year. And we might even throw in some, you know,
meowch.
Choices of,
there's a hint for the worst movie of the year.
Is that your worst movie of the year?
It's one of them. I got a couple.
Cats, is that your worst movie of the year?
Yeah, should we start with that?
Yeah, sure. Start with worst. But let's go from
right.
Worst.
I'm going to say something in Cats' defense.
Uh-oh.
At least I tried. It's something different.
Yeah.
Well,
this is Universal. They could have just put another Fast and Furious movie out if they wanted to make holiday money. But they gambled. And they lost,
but they
gambled.
They put a new
print out. I know
with different special effects,
better special effects.
Better
it's still washed out and kind of weird looking to me. I have to tell you, I saw this on. First of all, they didn't show
it
to anybody.
Did you see the new cut?
No, I haven't seen the new cut. But they all of a sudden, we all got this memo that said, "Hey, next Tuesday at the Landmark Theater, which is a kind of a strange theater anyway. It's a second run, or it's kind of a limited art house kind of a house." They've taken it over. They decorated the bar that's attached to it. They offered us liquor at 9 in the morning if we wanted it.
That's always a good sign.
I passed, which will stun everyone. But yeah, and then
unless you're
ran into a famous publicist who I won't name, and she had been to the premiere the night before. This was all very hurried up. The premiere was the night before, and then
I read something in the paper today.
Well, anyway, let me just finish. So then we walk into these theaters, and it's filled with regular people, like what we call an all media, which lets people from different radio stations come and see the movie. So they were filling the house with what they thought were fans, and it just stunk out loud for me. I'm sorry.
Was the audience as restless when you saw it as me? Because people actually went to the restroom during Jennifer Hudson's big number.
Well,
the big news
the next day was that at the premiere, Jennifer Hudson got an applause break, which, believe me, didn't happen at my screening at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were people. I can't name him, but a very famous. Well, this is a shitty story to tell because I'm not going to tell you who it is. But a very famous
critic
got kicked out for looking at his cell phone, and he was sitting very close to me.
No kidding.
They literally, there was no like, please turn that off. Security came. We were warned that there was going to be security, and security came over and said in his ear, loud enough so I could hear, "You're going to have to leave, sir."
And they threw him out of.
Yeah, he got up and left. And I thought he was lucky. He was the. I started to look at my cell phone, and they wouldn't kick me out.
Well, you know, before we continue, I will tell you that.
Oh boy.
Bill Bregoli and
this digression brought to you by LaCroix.
To not bring my cell phone
to Star Wars.
To Star Wars, and I had to check my cell phone.
You see,
because
just like everybody
they
else,
they kept coming, making these announcements every 5 minutes about, if we see you with that cell phone. We're going to throw you out of the theater.
Well, I think there's a little more concern for a movie like Star Wars than there is for Cats. I have a feeling now that if some of it leaked, they'd be happy because at least people would want to go and see
it. Here's a Cats headline from a newspaper today.
Catastrophic.
James Corden says, who's in Cats, says he still hasn't seen Cats but has heard it's terrible.
It feels like a James Corden summer. I said this on the show, I guess, a couple weeks ago, but... and I said it in a couple of interviews on CNN and stuff. It feels to me like a James Corden summer special with other big celebrity stars who each have, like Taylor Swift, one song and then they're gone. And all of that aside, everybody knew when they greenlit this thing that it had no, they greenlittered it, let's say, it had no story, no plot.
It's but how many people do you know that were actually interested in seeing this movie? Forget about critics.
It made a lot of money.
Did it?
No, I mean as a play.
No, I mean how'd the movie do?
No, it's making nothing.
Yeah, well,
it's gone.
Play was kind of immersive because the cats would come down.
You said it was going to do anything.
It's catatonic.
Yeah. They should have done a carpool karaoke with James Corden and one of the stars where they did the effects and made them look like cats in his car.
I think they might still do that and try and rescue it.
Well, here's some, before we move into the best, here's some other bad films. I hated this Jim Jarmusch movie called The Dead Don't Die.
Yeah, that was bad.
And, on paper, this looked, first of all, I like Jim Jarmusch.
Bill Murray.
All the way back to, Stranger Than Paradise and Night on Earth and Down by Law. The guy's very funny. So him doing a zombie movie, that sounded like it had potential to me. And, Bill Murray, Chloe Sevigny, Adam Driver, who's in like every movie that you could possibly think of these days. So, this thing looked like it had a lot of potential. There's other people in this thing, too. I can't remember.
It has a lot of big names.
I couldn't handle this movie.
Talked about that this year, too. We also talked about...
we talked about it on the TV show, which is on this Friday, sitting around talking pictures with Neil Rose. What do you want to say?
We couldn't
you're
get 2 minutes in it.
Sitting around talking movies with Neil Rosen on CUNY TV this Friday on PBS All Arts next Friday.
Fast-forward moment brought to you by LaCroix.
So anyway, it was terrible. My wife walked out of it. I had to sit and see the whole thing because I was reviewing it. And it was just like, it doesn't work as a comedy. It doesn't work as a scary movie.
I have a surprise worst movie of the year because it's on plenty of 10 best lists, and it's Parasite. And the problem I have with Parasite is that it's probably the best setup for a movie in the last 20 years. A low-income family that sort of ingratiates themselves.
But how do you put that on a worst list?
I'm explaining. Has an amazing setup, as I started to explain. And then it completely wastes it and jumps the shark at the end. It has what I call a false moment, and a couple of movies did that this year. One that's on my 10 best list, we'll get to in a second. But it had a false moment that took me out of the movie, and then it goes, I'm not giving anything away. It has a very violent conclusion that I just didn't buy. So Parasite... no one agrees with me, but it's one of my worst.
I wouldn't put it on my 10 best list, but
I did.
I would give it honorable mention. I mean, it's a good movie.
I'm an eat the rich kind of guy.
Yeah, I don't know how you put that.
I mean, kind of rich people.
The movie looks at, the
class structure.
Yeah, yes. And the 1% getting everything. And, you have people in this movie, literally, I guess, a pipe burst or something. They're swimming in sewage. And, and then the rich people are like fussing over the fact that the cake didn't have the right amount of rosettes on it or something.
No, I get all that. And that's why I said the setup is amazing. The payoff is not.
What did your wife think of it?
We both thought it was fine.
My daughter loved it and thinks I'm crazy. So,
I mean, it's fine. Yeah. I mean, I didn't say, wow, this is the...
Don't go by me.
Came late to the party. I didn't see it. I think had I seen it in a screening before, not knowing anything about it, I think I would have liked it more. It was very overhyped by the time I got to it, but that said, I thought it was interesting.
If we don't have any more bad ones, that transitions good ones. Okay,
we got a couple more bad ones.
Okay, but I don't want to leave this without saying, Parasite is on Bill's 10 best.
Yes,
yeah, I admit it.
He's our first 10
and he'd
best.
He'd be on my honorable mention.
All right.
I thought Corporate Animals was terrible. The Demi Moore movie with Ed Helms, who produced the movie, Ed Helms, where they all get stuck in a cave.
Yeah. Funny idea.
And I was
potentially.
I don't know.
Although it's like an SNL sketch. They start eating one another.
It's an SNL sketch. A 5-minute SNL sketch, which should have been 1 or 2 minutes, that went on too long, that went on for like 2 hours, and it was just... The humor fell flat.
I felt badly for Demi Moore only because I could tell somebody pitched it to her in a way that she thought it was going to be cool and dark and funny and maybe like a comeback for her because she needs one, but it didn't happen.
And I also hated the Netflix movie, which I don't think got a theatrical release, Murder Mystery with Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, yeah, that would be one of my 10 worst.
Adam Sandler.
Who happens to be on our 10 best list, I think.
We'll get to that. But,
well, let's get to it.
Coming up with some just really terrible movies.
Yes, you are. We can all Google, but I don't do that.
All right. So you want to do some best movies of the year? Why don't you start it off, McCuddy? Why don't you give me one of your 10
Well, let's transition. We never do those. This is called a segue. You just mentioned Adam Sandler, and Uncut Gems is easily one of my top five, actually. So Adam Sandler is a degenerate gambler on 47th Street. This film is starting to open up a little wider. He did a great interview on Howard Stern where he said, fuck yeah, I'd love an Oscar. So instead of those people that go, no, well, it's just nice to
said.
Be nominated.
He said, Howard Stern said, do you think you'll win an Oscar? He goes, how could I not win an Oscar?
Yeah, well, but
who's better than me? And it was hysterical right. because yeah, everybody plays that humble card of like, well, I don't know, you know, I'm not prepared to speak, you know, everybody, you know, the people in the category. He's like, how could I not? This was such a great, I thought that was
he's a
funny.
Desperate degenerate with a girlfriend on the side that thinks a big payday is
the
coming
degenerate
in terms
gambler
of a giant
who gets it
opal.
Over his head.
Yeah, and so I just thought, I except for the soundtrack, which is kind of pounding,
it's
the way the
Safdie
lighthouse
Brothers,
is.
New York filmmakers, Safdie Brothers, the Safdie yeah. Brothers. It's like a shot of adrenaline, nonstop express train that doesn't stop for 2 hours. I think Sandler is great in this. He's just like a completely messed up character. I mean, he's cheating on his wife. I mean, he's got all these like scams running at the same time. I mean, he's in debt to loan sharks, and he's just running like there's 90 things running at once in this movie, and Sandler's just juggling all these balls in
the air.
The
great Eric Bogosian. There's a lot of cool small characters in it, and one of them is Eric Bogosian, who I used to be a huge fan of when he did the Broadway shows,
he was
Sex,
great.
Drugs,
those
Rock and Rolls, all
those
that stuff.
Broadway shows were
all
great.
Just amazing and nice to see him working again. So to be clear, that's on my 10 best. It's on your 10 best. Bill, did Uncut
nope,
Gems
didn't.
Make it?
I
it's
need,
on
I needed,
my, damn
I,
it.
I needed pills when I came out of that.
That would be
really?
Number.
Like
yeah, that was well done, but it was just too much.
It was number three on my
it's two or three on
my
mine.
10 best list. Yeah. Didn't we see that together in the
yeah we did
in the Crosby
yeah I was sitting in the row in front of you
all right Bill throw out one of yours
then we had to meet and greet with Adam Sandler afterwards.
Sort of yeah Ford versus Ferrari was
oh
one.
Okay
yeah did it make yours
yes it did it's okay. Number 10 on mine
I didn't care for the movie
you're out of your mind
well again you
it's
talk,
just entertaining
he drives it have you seen what he drives. A Nissan that has
an Infiniti logo on it.
Yeah.
What's the matter with my car? I like my car.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not driving a Ferrari, but well, why don't you
Saturn
talk up the movie
once.
And then I'll tell you what I didn't like about the movie.
Well, that's based
it's not on my 10 worst list or anything. I just wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, if we give the plot to every movie, we're going to be here forever. But let's say it's based on a true story of Ford trying to beat Ferrari at Le Mans. It stars Christian Bale and Matt Damon.
Early
1966.
Okay, mid-60s.
And oddly enough, it's using the title Le Mans 66 in Great Britain, where it's also doing pretty well.
Well, you loved it also, but you're
yeah,
a car.
Yeah, Christian Bale is the
gearhead,
and Matt Damon plays Carroll Shelby, who was the famous guy who kind of rescued Ford, came out with the Ford Shelby, and they took Mustangs down to Mexico and put bigger engines in them and turned them into great cars. And they literally, I'll tell you what's weird about this. Everyone knows I used to be on Fox News. I'm not a Republican. I'm very moderate. But like this movie really makes you feel good about being an American. Because here's Ford Motor that have no chance winning this thing. And they put this race team together. They build this car. And I don't care that it's not on your top 10. But for you to say you don't care for it is really weird to me because it's immensely entertaining.
In the words of our friend Robert Wall, it's a Disney film. And it's not a Disney film, but it feels like a Disney film. I mean, first of all, I think on the positive side of this movie, I'm going to say something very positive about it. I think that the cars, the race scenes are probably some
it's
of the best
racing
the,
I've ever
if,
seen.
If not, it really makes you feel like you're behind the wheel of the car. And from that angle, I think that that's great from a filming standpoint. As far as the story goes, I really, you know, I'm not a car guy. I didn't really care. I mean, it was just like black and white villains.
So
here,
you're
you
anti-America, is what you're
no,
saying?
No, it was like you know.
Now you're working for Fox.
The guy that's working for Ford wanted to sabotage the race because he wasn't a fan of Matt Damon and Christian Bale. I don't know. You know, I didn't hate the movie. I didn't love the movie. I thought it was okay. I certainly wouldn't be on my top. I didn't care for the. I didn't care for the story. I thought the only thing I liked was Tracy Letts, who played Henry Ford II. I thought he kind of walked away with the movie as a personal vendetta against the Ferrari guy who was goofing on his cars, and that's why he wanted to like build the car.
Oh, Neil,
to beat
what
him.
Did you like then?
Yeah, tell us
give
something
us
you like
your,
this year.
Give us one of your
it's an all right
picks.
Movie. I'm not in love with the movie, you know? Okay. Let's start out with a documentary that I really liked, and it's called Scandalous, The Untold Story of the National Enquirer. And Bill Regoli, who's sitting here, I think, is the one that made me
watch this.
That's been established.
Desperately needed a documentary.
And I think this thing is great. I mean, you know, on paper, pun intended, since it's a publication, it sounds like, all right, who the hell wants to watch a documentary about the National Enquirer? But man, this thing was fascinating. How this thing started out as like a tabloid that was showing graphic pictures of murder crime scenes, you know, with
decapitations.
And faces that were like riddled with bullets and blood. And they go to the guy, listen, you know, well, he wants to increase his circulation. And they go like, he goes, I want to go into the supermarkets. They go, we can't, we have housewares. We can't put this in supermarkets. He goes, okay, no problem. No more crime scene photos. We're going to do celebrity tabloid journalism now. And then it talks about all the money that was like, you know, that was infused into this publication and how they gave it to all these journalists. Like, who's that? Oh, she's a publisher. She's a book publisher.
Judith Regan had the office next to me.
All these people worked for this place and they had unlimited budgets and they had expense accounts that they could spend. But every Friday, nobody knew who was going to get fired.
It's great.
And
it's,
how they broke the OJ. They're the ones that solved the OJ.
I'd be really surprised if this didn't turn into a feature.
They solved the OJ.
Because
the
roadmap is there.
And the other bigger, more legitimate newspapers on the OJ thing with the Bruno Mali shoes. It all leads, all roads lead back to Trump. There's a Trump connection there now.
The Trump thing I wanted more of, actually. I like that movie a lot. I'm going to say that I don't have any documentaries on my 10 best list. And
I have another one also.
It's probably the first time my Roy Cohn almost got on
mine.
Well,
that's on mine too.
I almost always in the last 10 years, as I look back at my list, have a documentary. And I just found regular movies.
I think it's fascinating, and as I just said, the other documentary on my list is "Where's My Roy Cohn?"
Well, that came close for me.
Bill?
It didn't make it made my honorable mentions.
I mean, here's a movie that shows you a guy that, if you want to understand what Donald Trump is doing, the playbook is completely ripped from Roy Cohn, and. I mean, everything that you're seeing now with Trump is just literally something that Roy Cohn did going all the way back to the McCarthy era in the 50s, saying, you know, if you're accused of something, not only don't deny it, spin it into a win. Say, you know, like, you're accused of this, see, I won, you know? People don't read the whole story, they just read the headlines, which goes to the Twitter thing. You know, just distract people. It's just everything that Trump is doing. It's like, and Trump was Roy Cohn's protege, which they say in the movie. And hence the title of the documentary, Where's My Roy Cohn? At one point, when Trump was president and he was having some difficulties, he was going, where's my Roy Cohn? Because Roy Cohn...
I just have to laugh because you think of every other president from Obama to Clinton. They're all influenced by like Washington, Lincoln, Jefferson. And our president liked Roy Cohn, the sleazy.
I mean, to the end, Roy Cohn is dying of AIDS and he has like 2 weeks to live.
Won't admit he's gay.
And he's interviewed and he says, no, liver cancer. Like he's always lying.
To Barbara Walters, to Mike Wallace, to everybody. Totally original. Fascinating man. If you have no idea who Roy Cohn
is,
you absolutely should see this movie.
No scruples, and he went after gays in during the 50s, and
he was self-hating.
And he was gay. I mean, the guy was a walking contradiction. I mean, it's just, and he was an evil guy. I mean, you know, nobody liked.
Well, as we said, if you don't know anything about him, this is a great. Like prime.
So that those are two documentaries.
Any documentary on your list?
Well, no, actually, Where's My Roy Cohn? Made my list of honorable mentions. I have some.
And tell me your thoughts on Roy Cohn before we pick out.
Made his honorable mention.
I
enjoyed it, but it got a little repetitive at times. And but it was fun. It was fun to watch. It's interesting. Who was in it? Is what's his name? Roger Stone.
Yeah.
Yeah. To see him as just a regular talking head like everybody else. So they didn't just talk to people who were totally against Roy Cohn.
Anybody else? Any documentaries music? There was a bunch of music documentaries.
Right. But they're not on our list. So let's move on.
Okay. All right. Pick a movie.
Any movie. What about Once Upon a Time
One. We're 3-for-3.
On my
ding,
list.
Okay. Ding, 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 ding. This trifecta brought to you by LaCroix.
On my list, Quentin Tarantino's 3-hour opus on, but great, really from the set design and the costumes captured, and funny. I mean, there's a lot, you know, look, it was a little too long, as you said, Bill McCuddy at one point about what did it need?
It needed Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
because that Harvey Scissorhands would have gotten it down to a 2-hour movie. But I'm thrilled that it's the length that it is. I've seen it twice now, and I'm really excited.
How's
because,
it play the second time around?
I think I mentioned this on an earlier podcast. Some things that you aren't sure about in terms of whether they're real or not present themselves in the second viewing as definitely being dream sequences.
Mm.
So, and it's much, much, much more obvious the second time you see it. But I just got a DVD, I think we all did,
yeah,
with 30 extra minutes of bonus scenes.
A 4K.
I can't wait.
A 4K version of...
I want more Bruce Lee. I want more at the farm. I'm sure there's a couple more scenes
you're right.
at the ranch.
Look, it's on my 10 best list, and you're right, McCuddy. It could have been cut. The Margot Robbie scenes where she's watching herself as Sharon Tate in a movie theater. They just kind of went on too long. You could have trimmed the movie. But that said, there are some scenes, which is the case with most Tarantino films, where I could watch some of these scenes in Pulp Fiction or Inglourious Basterds or Django over and over and over again, Reservoir Dogs, you know, there's just, or True Romance, which he wrote but didn't direct. Tony Scott directed it. Yeah, I mean, there's a scene, like you said, McCuddy, with Bruce Lee and Brad Pitt, that's terrific. There's a scene with DiCaprio and this young kid where he's
goes on forever.
He's telling a story about some cowboy. Who's,
if she doesn't win the Broadcast Film Critics Association's Critics' Choice Best Newcomer Award, then I'm gonna quit.
And then there's a Brad Pitt scene where he goes to find Bruce Lee on this. Which is now the Manson compound, which used to be a studio ranch where they would do like westerns and stuff
Warren
like that.
Warren Spahn's Ranch. That was the name of the guy.
So there's some really just, I would put it on again and just watch those scenes that are just
well, I think that's the test of a Quentin Tarantino movie. Now, would you watch it again and again and again? And we're all saying that we would. I had the opportunity to talk to Tarantino a couple of weeks ago at the Directors Guild, and I said, has Roman Polanski seen the movie? And he said he didn't think so. And I said, should he see it? And he said, absolutely. The one knock about this that some people are, so Owen Gleiberman, one of our colleagues at Variety, put it on his 10 best list as well, but he said the last 30 minutes are on his worst list because he thinks it's an affront to Sharon Stone's family and everybody that this revisionist history, which is what
Tarantino does
all the time.
Look at the end of Inglourious Basterds when like all the Nazis get burned in a
It's a little different to say maybe that they killed Hitler like 50 or 60 years ago as opposed to Sharon Tate.
Why is it different?
It just feels different to me.
I mean, you're changing history. You're killing Hitler.
Yeah, Polanski's still alive.
Tragedy plus comedy.
I mean,
was it tragedy
Himmler
plus time equals comedy? Does not have time.
Yeah,
what
I mean,
they're saying.
Well, Sharon Tate was killed, almost 50 years ago.
Right, and Polanski's still alive.
The Hitler thing.
Yeah, a lot of people
was like 70 some odd years ago. So you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that.
He rewrites history. It's on my 10 best list, and that's all I'm saying. Some people have complained
about it. It's on my
10
best list too. I like the film. I like the film.
I've got one that I don't think either of you have. An independent that really came out of nowhere for me and has not made a ton of money, but I highly recommend it. It's called Queen and Slim.
I like Queen and Slim. It wouldn't be on my 10 best list, but I'd give it an honorable mention. Real good movie.
Solid acting.
Yeah.
Believable. The premise is that two African Americans are on a date in Ohio. They shoot a white cop. They go on the lam.
I equate it to, there was a movie last year called The Hate U Give.
I
think that was a better movie, but this is a good movie, the Queen and Slim. But they're pulled over, and one kid gets shot in The Hate U Give. And in this one, they're harassed by this real racist prick cop who's like, you know.
Right.
And I would say self-defense. This is the beginning of the movie. I mean, you know, the guy is.
They certainly believe it's self-defense, and it's presented as, you know.
They go
they
on
didn't
the run.
Have to pull the trigger. Yeah. But anyway, they decide to go on the run. I think all the decisions they make are real. And I just think it's really solid. A lot of people, or some people who watch our television show and listen to this podcast, say over the years we've drifted away from talking about undiscovered little gems. We talk too much about mainstream movies and don't concentrate enough on the little hidden movies. And this is a hidden movie
hiding
that's
more and more.
That's amazing.
Well, you know, if you want to talk about unjust treatment of African Americans in film. Another movie on my list, although Queen and Slim is not, I said I'd give it an honorable mention, is a movie that would be on my 10 best list is Just Mercy, which is...
I got to abstain on that because it's one of the movies I have not seen.
Well, it's Michael B. Jordan, true story, plays this lawyer who goes down to, I believe, is it Alabama, Brigoli? I think it's Alabama.
I have to abstain too. I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, either. Well, let's say it's Alabama. It's either Alabama or Mississippi. I'm pretty sure it's Alabama in the Deep South, you know, quite a number of years ago, and decides to defend innocent prisoners that have been convicted on death row. And they are clearly innocent, and he brings forth evidence that shows that some of these prisoners, there's no way they could have been committed.
Jamie Foxx, or
yes,
is that a different movie?
One of them is Jamie Foxx. Okay. That there's no, and Brie Larson is
and
in
by
it
by the
too.
Way, people listening now know that the way this works is now Neil has to convince Bill and I to put it on our top 10 list.
Brie Larson plays Michael B. Jordan, who's a Yale graduate.
That's a joke, I'm telling Neil.
Michael B. Jordan is a Yale graduate, and she's his assistant. And they're trying to get these convictions overturned. I mean, and the racism, it's shocking. I mean, it's so frustrating. I mean, here, look at the time frame. Here's the alibi. There's 9 people that say the guy wasn't there. Here's even photographic evidence. Judge is like, no, I'm sorry. You did not show me enough evidence where we could reopen this trial. I mean,
I'm going to tell you something about that movie that may disappoint you, and I haven't seen it, neither has Bill, but I am reading about the fact that the Jamie Foxx character had an affair with a white woman, and his son married a white woman.
So?
And they say that well, first of all, he says that's why he got put in jail. Why isn't that in the movie? They said that's why he's railroaded. The filmmakers decided to leave that out because they say it would have made him less...
I don't know about any of that, but
well, it's true.
But they
it
there,
seems
there
conspicuous
is,
by its
there
absence.
There is mention in the movie of him having you since you haven't seen the movie about him having an affair, and they don't mention the race of the woman that he had an affair with, but the wife is who he's still married to is forgiving. He said, "I forgive you." It's not about that. It's about you not having to not only spend your life in jail, being put to death in jail for a crime that you didn't do. So there is an affair that's mentioned in this, and there's a plot point.
Right.
So just see the movie. It's the
well,
acting
you've
is great.
You convinced me to see it, but
and
you haven't.
Have I convinced you, Brigoli, to see
sure.
it? You all
sure.
have the DVD.
Hey, it made your top 10, and we haven't seen it. So yeah, I'm going to see it now.
Okay, so give me a movie, Brigoli.
Actually, I want to talk about a movie that's probably not on any of our top 10 lists, and you would think it would be, and
is it
everybody
on yours?
Else probably no. It's not, but it's probably on everyone else other than the three of us's list.
Parasite.
The Irishman.
Oh, good. Yeah, let's have that conversation. I think that...
Not on my list.
Crazy overrated. And you know what's interesting? I was one of the
and
first
it's gonna,
people...
And it might win the Academy Award
really
for Best Picture.
I'm really not going to like... Well, yeah, I am going to pat myself on the back. I walked out of that New York Film Festival screening at 9 in the morning with every major critic in town. It was 100%... An hour and a half later,
and then you had the press conference with everybody in the movie,
and I was the only guy that said, "Did we see the same fucking movie?" This thing is so. All I'm going to say about that is, besides being early to that to the hate game on this, is that more and more real people who are watching it on Netflix now are bailing after an hour.
Well, I'm going to tell you that.
Roma. This year's Roma.
No, I'm not going to say that it's that bad on any level. There's some scenes in this movie that are terrific. But I'm going to tell you that I think the way to see it is on Netflix in increments. Everybody that I know that, like regular people that are now watching it on Netflix going, yeah, I'm halfway through. Yeah, I've seen 2/3 of it.
Which is how you always said people should
see it. Right, people should see it. To sit in a movie theater for 3 hours and 29 minutes to see this movie. There was so much we talked about earlier about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood needed Harvey Weinstein to cut it. I think somebody needed to cut a good 40 minutes out of this particular film. I mean, look,
it takes an hour and 10 minutes for Al Pacino to come on.
After
and that's
Jimmy Hoffa
it's all
dies,
about Jimmy Hoffa.
And Jimmy Hoffa dies. There's no spoiler there. I mean, he's killed, you know.
We know the story.
Right. I mean, there's another 40 minutes of the movie that I think is superfluous that doesn't need to really be there. There's a lot of this movie.
Everyone mentions the Jesse Plemons like problem too.
I mentioned that.
I'm not going to say anything else. If you haven't seen it, I don't want it. But there's like a huge problem with that. And everyone who's seen it says the same
thing.
Look,
I think it's an okay movie. Here's the thing with that
movie. It's Godfather 3.
I'm going to tell you something about that movie. Okay.
Yes.
I love.
Do please.
I love good. It's no Goodfellas and it's no Casino.
It's Old Fellas.
Other Scorsese films that are great. And I remember distinctly after I saw Goodfellas. You know, I loved Goodfellas, and then a number of years later, he came out with Casino, and I remember going to a screening at Casino, and I was with a colleague of ours who, I don't know where she is these days. Her name was Robin Carter. She used to be on Channel 5 in New York.
The third retelling of this story is brought to you by LaCroix.
Channel 2. And we were so excited because Goodfellas was so great. And here you had the same cast and the same director. And I think Nicholas Pileggi, didn't he write,
yes.
write the same screenwriter? And I was disappointed because my expectations were so high on this film. I walked out of Casino going, yeah, you know, it's like Goodfellas, Rita, and
so is The Irishman going to stand the test? I know where you're going with this. So 5 years from now, will we watch The Irishman and go, you know what, this isn't bad?
A couple of years later, I see Casino on HBO, and I'm like, with no expectation, because I've seen the movie, and I go, you know, this is, this, I was kind of hard on this movie. This isn't, this is okay.
I think my question explained
now
all
I
that.
Love Casino. I've seen it 20 times.
So 5 years from now, you're going to love The Irishman.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I wonder if you, just the way you saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again, I wonder if, you know, I start watching The Irishman again, if I'll have the same reaction with no expectation now going, you know.
It's still going to be slow. It's still going to be talky.
It's not funny. Those Casino and Goodfellas are funny. Let's face it.
I don't need funny. I just need, like, a good story well told. And this is just like, first of all, it was already told in Hoffa. So we knew the story pretty much inside and out. And
Hoffa's not a great movie.
It's not. David Mamet wrote it.
It's not a great movie. It's okay.
So I called this Godfather 3. I repeat it because here's the analogy. It's people you want to see back together again, not in the movie you want to see them in.
I like the scene, which is a kind of a steal from Goodfellas of like, am I funny? You think I'm funny? How am I funny? Joe Pesci scene where Jimmy Hoffa is in Miami and somebody comes late to a meeting and dressed inappropriately to a meeting. I think that's a good scene. There are
So here's my question for all of you. Is it closer to your 10 best list or your 10 worst list? If it had to be on one or the other,
Yes. I can't just say neither.
No. Because it's closer to one than the other.
It would be closer to my 10 best list, but it would not be on my 10 best list. It would
be closer to my 10 worst.
It would be on,
really?
It would be closer to my 10 best list.
Closer to my 10 best, but...
Yeah, it's an all right film. It's okay.
All right. Let me give you one I like that... is going to maybe be controversial. Joker.
I like Joker. I wouldn't put Joker on my 10
I had Hustlers
list.
On it.
Ugh,
I had Hustlers
that,
on my 10 best.
That's a contender to be on
my
10
wife,
worst list.
That's my
wife
honorable mention, actually.
Promised to divorce me if I put Hustlers on.
Oh,
and
wow.
She says, what about Joker? You fucking love Joker. And I'm like, you know what? You're right, Mrs. McCuddy. I forgot Joker. So Joker bumped Hustlers. I like Joker. Is Joaquin Phoenix going to win?
Why don't you open that?
Why don't I open it? All right. This is a good spot right here.
That was a LaCroix, the most refreshing soft drink.
It's not LaCroix.
Actually, it's Kirkland from the Signature Series. Because Neil spends, baby. No. All right. So we're back to live action.
You don't
action.
Like my car. You don't like my beverages. My God. What's
don't get us started on this apartment. All right. So...
now you're crossing the line. I like Joker. I mean,
is Joaquin going to win?
Is he going to win, or should he, or does he deserve to win?
He's the front runner who could now stumble. But that's a
whole other show.
That's a whole nother show.
I like Joaquin's performance. I like the movie. I mean, having read Batman comics as a kid and having seen all those Batman movies, I like that they invented a backstory on how the Joker became the
and how
Joker.
He got that laugh. That's a really interesting
I like the fact that Batman's not in the movie. It's not a superhero movie. It's really kind of a... He was influenced, the director...
Todd Phillips.
Todd Phillips says he was influenced by such movies as Taxi Driver. And if you watch the movie...
And King of Comedy.
And it is King of Comedy in a way, in reverse, because in King of Comedy, Robert De Niro plays a stalky, crazy... stand-up comic who works his way onto a talk show. And in this particular one, Robert De Niro is the host of similar type of talk
show. Which is a fun kind of nod back to it. Is Joker on your 10 best list?
No.
Would not be on my 10 best list.
No, not even that.
Really?
I just found it repetitive. It felt like
it is.
It ran out of plot.
It's kind of like here.
It was overrated. But it's like so original. Nero was really badly cast.
I don't think it's original at all.
Well, in terms of, could you imagine a major studio made this Todd Phillips like origin story with no CGI, no nothing, and it's over 2 hours long.
And it made a
and I think it holds up.
Yeah, to
it's
make money.
Doing incredibly well. But that's not my reason. I admire it as much as I like it, and I like his performance. But I will tell you, I said earlier, Parasite had a moment in it that took me out of the movie, that what I called a false moment, and this movie has a false moment, and it happens on the talk show with Robert De Niro, and for the five people who haven't seen it, I'm not going to say what happens, but I was disappointed by that because it didn't ring true to me.
Okay.
Still made my 10 best list.
I think, I spoke to Todd Phillips, and he said that, I said, where do you shoot the subway scenes? And he goes, they kept showing me these pristine, you know, there's these subway scenes
right.
in subway stations in Manhattan.
And this is supposed to be the 80s.
That aren't used, that like there's a City Hall station that's not used, that they use in a lot of movies. And it's really beautiful. I mean,
it's too pretty for this
movie. They clean it right. He goes, no, I want the ugliest, grimiest, seediest looking subway station. And they found one up on like 100 and something street that's closed. And, you know, he goes, I want rats going by. You know, I don't want it looking good. So it's filmed, you know, the look of the film is quite good. I think Joaquin Phoenix is quite good in the film. I mean, more so, believe it, in my opinion, when he's, before he makes the transformation into the Joker, when he's just this bully, he's being bullied by these guys and he's playing a clown and he's trying to entertain kids in children's hospitals and, you know, just trying to be, with his disability as a, you know, trying to get by and everybody's just beating the shit out of him. And, you know, I thought that was actually more of a good acting on his part than when he's got the white makeup on and he's just being kind of a, you know, cartoon character lunatic. Not that that was bad, but I think
Joker, my list, not on their list.
No. All right. Here's one on my list. Talk about independent films. It's a foreign film. It's by Pedro Almodovar and it's called Pain and Glory. And I think it's Almodovar's best work. And I'm not the biggest fan of Almodovar. I'm not one of these, Almodovar, he's, you know.
You're a lousy judge of his best work.
No, I think that his work is okay, but I'm not like a devotee. Some people are like anything that, I like Almodovar, but I'm not crazy nuts about, like, everything he does is the greatest thing. But I think this is certainly, I think it's his best work. It's semi-autobiographical. It's Antonio Banderas, who I think deserves an Oscar for this. He's incredible.
He's quite good, yeah.
Plays sort of a director, I guess, sort of like Almodovar, who's aging and is afflicted with all these... that's how the movie opens. He talks about, when I was 30, I didn't think about my health at all. Then he starts listing a list of 800 things that are wrong with him, and he's kind of almost...
Using heroin would be one of those things.
Well, he starts
that's
using...
wrong.
They want to do an anniversary of one of his most celebrated films. And
right.
He had a rift with the star of that film. And they want to have him and the star of that film present at a special showing, a gala showing of the 30th anniversary of the movie or something like that.
That's very well done.
Right.
Those guys are both good.
So he has to mend fences with this guy. And this guy... I won't say... turns him into a junkie. The guy's doing heroin, and Antonio Banderas says, I'd like to try some of that, and he starts doing heroin. But that's not really the basis of the movie. It's really kind of a character study on this guy that is past his glory days. He's failing in health, and it's about his love life and his life in general.
The ever-present Penelope Cruz.
This flashbacks to his childhood, which he was raised very poor, but it seemed to be a very loving childhood. You know, Penelope Cruz is his mom. It's filmed beautifully, as most Almodovar movies are, especially those flashback scenes.
And has a tremendous twist ending involving those flashback scenes that I thought was like one of the best endings of the year. But
So that would be on my top 10
list. I found the movie overrated. And I don't think it is his best
move.
I think the work where he's one of the best directors of women probably working in cinema. And I think when his movies are female-centric, he's a little stronger. But I like this movie. It would probably be an honorable mention. But I found maybe I had too high of an expectation when I went into it, hearing everybody say it's his best movie ever. I thought it was very, very good. And I thought the scenes between he and the actor who he was... not talking to, I thought those scenes were great, and I thought that actor was really well written in terms of he was very pragmatic about why they should get back together again. And it was,
so it sounds like you like it.
I like it. Honorable mention is not disliking. It's not a. It's closer to my top 10 than my top worst.
Okay.
But
well, you also said overrated, but you'd still be honorable mention. Okay.
Yeah.
What about you?
I pretty much agree with Bill, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would it be honorable mention on your list, or would he make an honorable mention on your list?
It might.
Well, he has an honorable mention list, and it's not on it.
I got an honorable mention that I know is not on Neil's list, which is Hustlers.
Well, Hustlers would be my worst list.
I guess that would be my honorable mention, too, since Mrs. McCutty bumped it.
How could you it was such a...
She bumped and grinded.
It's like one step above Showgirls. It's just...
No, it's not. It's like a female Martin Scorsese film. Bill and I both said that when it first came out.
It's so dopey. I think it's just so dopey, you know.
Okay, what do you? I'm wondering. I know it's not another one. I know is not on your list, but it's on mine. And I don't know if it's on Bill's. Is Booksmart?
Oh, I was just going to say Booksmart's on.
Not on my list.
Yep.
See,
the only thing
I'll cop to, since Neil gets to repeat everything 5 and 6 times in this series, is that I did predict this was going to be a huge hit because I just thought it was really, really smart and
that
well
was good
done.
Call.
I thought it was going to make $100 million. It made like 30 or 40, yeah. So it didn't. Do quite what I thought it would do, but I thought it was original. I've seen this one last night before we go to college or summer, last summer party thing, graduate thing. I've seen that a million times. Say anything. Some of my favorite movies are that premise, but this one had fresh stuff in it. Stumbled a couple of times with a yacht with a rich kid that had a party that nobody came to. But like everything else, I thought was really funny and fun, including an animated sequence that I normally
hated. That sequence.
I hate that kind of shit.
This is
this is making me laugh. So
and that movie's not. Nobody's talking about that movie for any kind of awards.
It's
either.
Actually up for some Critics' Choice Awards. Best original screenplay or something like that.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. I did not like...
Or best comedy, too.
I did not like that movie at all. It not bad enough to be on my 10 worst list, but I did not like that movie at all. I couldn't... I've seen it, you said you've seen it a million times, but you loved it. I've seen it a million times, and I did not like it. So there was nothing fresh and original in the movie, and I could not connect to the characters, and I did not like that
movie. We are getting close to our number ones, but we're not there
yet. I'm gonna throw something at you.
Oh, boy.
Here's a movie that kind of came and went. Like, I'm a Beatles freak. You're a car freak with Ford versus Ferrari. I thought Yesterday was a lot of fun. I just thought, it's everybody in the world. You just got to buy into it. Everybody in the world wakes up and nobody knows that, nobody ever heard of the Beatles except for one guy. And
not.
He takes credit for all the Beatles songs. He's a struggling, crappy singer-songwriter. And all of a sudden, he starts stealing all these Beatles songs who nobody ever heard of the Beatles before and becomes an overnight sensation. I thought it was really just endearing and fun. And if you like the Beatles...
I love Danny Boyle movies. I always think they're going to be great, well-crafted, put together. This is well put together. There's a surprise involving one of the Beatles that I didn't see coming and absolutely took my breath away.
Yeah.
It might be worth it just for that. But as I said on the television show, coming soon to CUNY and then PBS...
Friday.
It paints itself into a corner by making this guy rip off the Beatles for 9/10 of the movie, not cop to it, and has a bullshit kind of ending that I didn't like.
The ending could have been stronger.
You're not rooting for a guy who's lying to everybody.
I was rooting for the guy. Did you like the movie?
No.
You didn't like the movie?
It was a one gimmick movie to me.
Well, it was written by Richard Curtis and, as you said, directed by Danny Boyle, the team that did Love Actually. Which there were a lot of Love Actually haters out there. I actually love Love Actually.
I love it too.
And I think, again, if you go along for the ride and you go, okay. I mean, it's funny. They show you this in the trailer. He Googles Beatles and he comes up with bugs and he Googles John Paul and... Pope John
there's
Paul.
A couple of
Pope
other
John
things.
Paul comes up in the
there's
Google
a couple
search.
Of other things that don't exist either besides the Beatles, and that's a good running gag. And
was
Ed Sheeran is absolutely hilarious as Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran,
right? And who says to him, "Don't call it Hey Jude, call it Hey Dude." But those moments aren't. And Kate McKinnon is very funny as his manager. But closer to my top 10 than my 10 worst. But like. Not even an honorable mention for me.
Give me a movie, Brigoli.
Okay, what did you think of Bombshell, speaking of Kate McKinnon?
Well, if you...
Oh, interesting. Bombshell.
Okay, on my 10 best. Well, talk about Bombshell, and then I'll give you some. But it's on your list?
Yeah, it's on my list. The performances were really good, and I know there's that other miniseries that everybody saw, but this tells the same story in an hour and change. And I kind of like that.
Well, it doesn't tell exactly. It does.
It somewhat tells the same story.
Yeah. Well, this is the Megyn Kelly.
This is more female-driven, and this is more about the women, and the series is more about Roger Ailes.
Right.
You have a better Roger Ailes
in the
loudest room
well,
on Showtime.
Well, the loudest voice, not loudest the loudest voice. Room, the loudest. Is actually...
Well, it's based on the loudest voice in the room.
It's on my... Even though it's television, but this... What's the distinction these days, really?
Oh, that's cheating.
The loudest
Jesus
voice
Christ,
is on
I didn't know that.
Is on my
that.
Is on my 10 best list.
You have betrayed this audience so brutally with that.
And I wish I saw Bombshell first, because after watching 7 hours of The Loudest Voice, where Russell Crowe is brilliant as Roger Ailes,
pale
and I thought
by comparison.
Naomi Watts was better.
John Lithgow is no Roger Ailes.
And I thought Naomi Watts was a better Gretchen Carlson than Nicole Kidman. I watched Bombshell, and it was like, scenes that were 45 minutes in the miniseries that they could really explore the detail of. 2-minute mention, 3-minute mention. I thought I was like the Reader's Digest version of the thing.
Megyn Kelly.
And it is the Megyn
Charlie
Kelly
Stern
story
is
as opposed to The Loudest Voice, which is really the Gretchen Carlson, Roger Ailes founding of
right.
Fox News story. So it is a different movie. But coming off The Loudest Voice, which is on my 10 best list as a 7-part Showtime miniseries, I thought Bombshell fell quite short. But if I had seen it alone, which you never saw The Loudest Voice, did you, Brigoli?
No, I didn't. Yes. I have the DVDs, and
well,
someday
like
if
Neil,
I have...
Well, he'd wished he'd seen it first,
hours.
So now you can
it's okay.
live yeah. the Neil dream.
It's okay. Yeah. I think Charlize Theron is great as Megyn Kelly.
Look, I lived there. We've had this conversation right. many times. Roger Ailes was my agent. He discovered me, and I have nothing but respect for what he did as... a leader and an innovator, but you know, he was a scumbag, and I feel sorry to say that, but Bombshell is not
he's
on my
not
10
only a
best.
Scumbag,
I'm
he
probably
was a sexual,
too, I probably have to
abuser and he
had to put an asterisk.
Well, I think that runs with scumbag.
You know,
all right, here's one from my best and I don't think it's on anyone else's, although we're getting down to I think we just have two more. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood with Tom Hanks.
10 worst list.
Was it's on your worst?
Yep. Hated
wow.
it.
Hated it. I didn't. I got. Except for my number one movie, this movie took me to a place, introduced me to a guy, and sort of washed over me. Maybe almost like I'd going to Jonestown and drinking the Kool-Aid, but I was completely taken
that was nice.
With the idea of someone as good and as kind as this man. Turning around the life of Matthew Reese, the guy from Esquire magazine.
It's all bullshit.
It's not all bullshit.
I spoke to the people in the. It's all bullshit. Matt, I did the junket.
There was no such guy as Mr. Rogers.
Okay,
Esquire magazine never existed.
The reason that the guy who wrote the Esquire article, who was a consultant on the film, is called has a different name in the movie is because the guy will tell you, I never got into a fight with my father. My sister was not married. There's so many
well,
inaccurate.
I don't care about
they,
that.
They fictionalize
I don't give
it.
A
There's
shit
so
about
many,
that.
It's fiction. It's a work of fiction.
The whole thing is just a bunch of bullshit. I mean, this guy's life was not turned around by Mr. Rogers. And if you and even if I didn't know that,
but the characters
watching the
was.
Movie straight up. Okay, Mr. Rogers was after my time. Maybe if they did a Captain Kangaroo movie, who I grew up with, I would feel more endeared to
I
the
met
thing.
Him, actually, yeah.
What's that?
I met Captain Kangaroo.
Bob Keeshan?
I want Tarantino
nice guy?
To do
really
that.
Nice guy.
Yeah, well, they were friends, actually.
He didn't change my life.
Mr. Rogers
nice
and Bob
guy.
Keeshan, who played Captain Kangaroo, apparently they did each other's shows and stuff.
Huh.
But I was not – I did not feel any – Tom Hanks said on a talk show when he started watching hours and hours of Mr. Rogers to prepare for the role, he goes, you know, he goes, I'm not really getting it. But then I'm realizing, okay, this show is geared for like 3- and 4-year-olds. So,
well, having, apparently I'm a 3-year-old.
So yeah. Having not seen this – the real Mr. Rogers growing up and my daughter – it was after her time, so she didn't grow up with Mr. Rogers. I mean this whole, you know, hello kids – you know,
but it's not really about Mr. Rogers. It's about this fictional character that you don't like. and how it changed his life. And I don't care
bullshit.
That it's made up.
The Chris Cooper thing was, he was like right out of Central Casting with the father who's like, how's this going to turn out? You know, I have a rift with my
Somebody
son.
Somebody needs to talk to the real Mr. Rogers.
I didn't care for the movie. I thought it was just so sappy and stupid.
Hey, his widow says it's very accurate.
You know what I liked? I liked the Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood skit on Saturday Night Live when Eddie Murphy came back to host last
And speaking
week.
Of Eddie Murphy, what's on your 10 best list?
Dolomite is my name, is on my 10 best
Definitely
list.
My honorable mention. It's not
in
my 10 best.
Yeah, honorable mention for me.
Well,
a hard time getting through it.
You know, I got to tell you something. I bet you didn't see it in the theater, Bergoglio.
I saw it on Netflix.
It's so funny because you saw it in the theater, right?
I did. But
right,
it was me and like three other critics.
Anybody that sees this in a theater loves the movie. And anybody that sees this on Netflix goes, you know, I think you need an audience. I think you need to see it. I saw it in a packed audience. Yeah. Everybody's laughing. I don't think, and this is a whole other discussion, which we can get into on another day about these films going straight to Netflix.
It falls flat for people
falls flat when they're watching it on Netflix alone, as opposed to seeing it in an audience with, on a big movie screen. Mm. I think it works on a big movie screen, you know, where people are laughing. Anybody I talked to have seen it on Netflix going, yeah, it's okay, or I didn't really care for it. And
Netflix didn't run this in the Paris Theater, did they? And they haven't.
No,
they didn't,
no. But I know a lot of people, critics that saw it like I did in screening rooms, and other friends of mine that saw it in screening or in theaters, and said like that was just great, great. You know, so I don't know. Maybe it just doesn't work on a television screen. You know, there are movies that and comedies that just kind of just don't work that much on a TV screen. So I don't know. I don't know if that'll hurt Eddie Murphy's Oscar chances, but that's a whole other
show. No, this isn't Norbit. This isn't like that bad. That it's
no, I loved it. I think, it's the story of Rudy Ray Moore, a true story about a struggling stand-up comic who adopts this character called Dolomite and tries to make a movie in this, like James Franco's character in...
Right.
Same
Disaster
screen-
Room.
What's that?
Disaster Room.
The Disaster
called?
Artist.
Disaster
and
Artist.
It's written
right.
by the guys who wrote Ed the Wood, room. The screenplay, which is about another.
Yeah, listen, I
guy
don't think the screenplay.
Made,
I don't think the screenplay is as strong as the movie. The movie is all Eddie Murphy and.
But Eddie Murphy's back and great in it.
And Wesley Snipes, people like.
By the way, did you guys like Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, it was okay.
I thought it was great that he came back. I thought two things. He's retired that laugh. He's never going to do the laugh again.
Yeah.
I can just tell now.
He didn't do the laugh on the show.
He didn't do the big laugh. And like the 48 hours laugh, the laugh we all want him to do. He's retired it.
But he did Gumby.
Never do it.
He did Mr. Robinson.
The Gumby
thing. He did Velvet Jones.
The Gumby thing felt like.
Did you know anything new that you found interesting?
He did two characters.
Or is he just rerunning old
characters?
It felt like an older guy trying to do his younger guy characters. Yeah. I mean, I have to be honest.
He did two characters that you have not seen before. He did four characters. What, he did Gumby.
He didn't embarrass himself. It was a solid B plus. Solid B plus.
Yeah. Well, I thought
and one of the funniest sketches was at the end.
The Santa sketch?
I
didn't like that sketch. No, I thought the sketch with, again, back to Mr. Robinson, the fact that they updated that to, it was always from in the 80s that he was living in this ghetto.
But that
now,
was exactly
and
as you
Harlem
would expect
is, it. Is like yeah. all
he's
the,
got a big screen TV that the white couple says
no, but,
he stole.
But he goes, so-and-so's living in the apartment. They paid $1.9 million for an apartment that Jack the Crack was baking crack cocaine. I thought it was funny. You know. But,
okay.
All right.
Let's
on.
Talk about Little Women.
Oh, that's on your list?
It is.
Oh, okay.
I surprised myself.
Again, I'd give that an honorable mention.
Robert Wall was texting me last night. Our friend Robert Wall texting me during the watching of that.
Yeah, me
he
too.
Goes, is this going to get any better? Tell me this feels
so
like
give
the
you
Irishman.
Text of like it's, I'm an hour week? In. This, I'm an
yeah,
hour
yeah.
in.
Yeah,
yeah.
Did he say to you, this? You know what this movie needs?
Joker?
The Joker.
Yeah,
to come in and kill all
the
women.
Text.
So, okay. So, look. I guess we're on the same stream. Sorry. So, This is absolutely on my top 10 list.
Okay.
And I think it's not only one of the best movies of the year, I think it's almost single-handedly in my memory, and I've been trying to figure this out
the
if
Godfather
it's really true.
The Godfather is a better
The best adaptation ever done.
How about The Godfather? You don't think that's a better adaptation?
I think this is right up there. I think the sort of the modernization of it, even though it's set in the same period, I think Greta Gerwig has now established herself as one of our best young filmmakers.
Well, yeah,
it's a
two
for you. Obviously, get Noah Baumbach.
I mean, I could say Gone with the Wind was an incredible, screen adaptation. I mean, there's a lot of great screen adaptations.
Well, okay,
of
let's
novels.
Put that argument aside, so we don't spend another hour on that.
Right.
This is Very well done. I liked everything about it, and I didn't think I would. This is kind of a chick flick.
It is a chick flick.
And
to use a sexist term, but yes.
Yeah. So that's what I said. What I meant by unfortunately, I don't care that it's. I like that it's a chick flick. I'm very in touch with my chick flick side, apparently, and so is Bill. So we like it. What about you? What say you?
Oh, what's wrong with this one, Neil?
No, I like the movie.
Needs more men?
No. Honorable mention. I think it's a great literary adaptation. It jumps around. It doesn't go linear. It sequentially, it's out of sequence.
It's a little tricky.
I like that.
Some people complain about that. I thought it was great.
I like
all
that.
Is watch Saoirse Ronan's hair length, and you'll be able to know what time frame you're in. That's what I had to do.
Florence Pugh, that's your best feature.
There were two silent film versions of this movie and five talkies. Of this, going back to
this
Catherine,
is the best.
Catherine Hepburn. I mean, I could go
Winona
on.
Winona Ryder got an Oscar nomination.
Look, it's really well done. I mean, the costumes, the cinematography, the pacing, No, it didn't. Timothy Chalamet.
Where did the bitches turn their back on Neil Rosen?
Timothy Chalamet is terrific. So is, who plays the next door neighbor? Was it?
Chris Cooper.
Chris Cooper.
Chris Cooper.
The guy you
good.
Hated from.
From Won't You Be My Neighbor?
And he will be their neighbor in this movie.
I thought Saoirse was great. I think Florence Pugh was excellent.
Yeah,
yeah, I liked it. I mean, look, not my kind of subject matter. I mean, in all honesty, but that's not the fault of the movie. I mean, you know, my wife loved it. You know, I thought it was. You know, look, I can recognize that it's a very well done movie. You know, personally,
we're down to our last two.
Okay.
Boom, 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 boom.
Right.
And this is not my number two, but I'll just give it to you because we haven't talked about it yet. Marriage Story. Marriage Story.
That's my number one.
Squeaked into my. Oh, you wanted to. Oh,
well,
sorry.
Yeah, well, you mentioned I can't just like not. I
okay,
mean,
all right. You could have just said it was on your list.
No, it's my number one.
Not all right. On my list.
It's in my top and didn't make your list at all.
No, I didn't feel anything. It was rich people problems.
I watched it with my wife
I get
at the Hampton Film Festival. And
no one likes a bragger.
There is
your wife afterwards.
No. There was a, you know, literally, you know, jaw-dropping scene. There's two jaw-dropping scenes in there. One is, and I watched it again. It's on YouTube. It's on Netflix. We have the DVD. There's a fight scene between, I mean, as I've always said about this movie, it should be called Divorce Story because it's really the examination of a couple with a kid that, you know, wants to kind of, they're getting a divorce and they want to do it nicely. They don't want to have a contentious situation and then lawyers get involved and, of course, everything gets just so much worse. There's a fight scene that escalates between Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson, the couple in question, that every sentence ups the stakes and it's just – I watched it again. I said maybe I just was under the spell of it the first time I saw it and I watched it like just here in the apartment and it's just as powerful. And then there's a scene between the lawyers between Laura Dern and Ray Liotta that's also just like, you know, Adam Driver has a kind of a folksy homespun nice lawyer played by Alan Alda and
that doesn't get the job
Scarlett
done.
Scarlett Johansson goes, you should have stuck with whatever that lawyer was. And he goes, no, I needed my own asshole.
Laura Dern is amazing in this movie.
So Ray Liotta and her.
So is Julie Haggerty, to mention some of the smaller
performers. They're also escalating. What about, well, you didn't say that. I think it's a great
movie. It's very
well
written. Noah Baumbach.
Wrote and directed it.
Squid and the Whale and made some other great movies. And as we said, is Greta Gerwig's live-in companion. This is based, I guess, loosely on his marriage to Jennifer Jason Leigh. And I think it rings very true. Yeah, you're right, Bill. It's a bunch of white people problems. But that's who the story's about. That's who lived it. That's what we're shown.
Yeah,
and it's
it.
Often compared to Kramer versus Kramer. We've said on this show before, it's not really the same because that has the protagonist as Dustin Hoffman. And we are pulling for him through the whole movie. This movie, we go back and forth. Is he the best for the kids? Is Scarlett the best for the kids? What did she move out? Did he abandon her? There's I think the Oscar-winning moment for Adam Driver is out of nowhere, he gets up and sings a song with a bunch of his buddies, his cronies from the theater he runs. And I just thought, man, one more original moment in this movie, a touching ending that you don't quite expect.
I think it's the best movie of the year.
It's not my best movie of the year, but
it's
now
it's not even on your list, Bergoglio.
No, I know, but leaves us one more.
Well, we got two more.
Oh,
well, we have one more.
My number three movie would be Uncut Gems.
We talked about that at the top of the show.
For a second. It's Adam Sandler.
Said it was on
Sandler.
Your list. We talked about it quite a long time.
Yeah. Well,
it was so long ago you've forgotten. And right. Thank you, by the way, to anyone still listening, because we are now right. getting to
All
our...
All right, Saged, go. Your number one pick is on my 10 best list. It's not number one. Lay it on us. Go ahead.
My number one pick is Jojo Rabbit.
Me too.
And Brigoli agrees. And we didn't know that when we came. In fact, we haven't compared notes at all. But
that's right. That would be on my 10 best list, unquestionably. Maybe like in the top five.
Yeah.
Top, maybe number four.
Yeah. Talk about original. And talk about Scarlett Johansson again in this movie as the mother of a little boy in World War II whose best friend is Adolf Hitler. And on paper, this absolutely shouldn't work.
Sounds like it's the most offensive
and
thing.
And I saw it also at the Hamptons Film Festival. And two or three people walked out in the first like 5 minutes.
Well, here's the thing with that movie. And again, it's on my 10 best list. Is, you know... I don't know what the hell is going on in that movie the first half an hour in terms of like where are you going with this?
But well, you could say that for so many movies,
you're
going, Neil.
You're making a comedy about, you know, Hitler, and this is just not funny subject matter. But then something happens, and then you go halfway through, oh, I get it now. You know, I understand that this was all like laying foundation for something.
No other movie for the whole year.
Of a deeper lesson about how fucked up
changed tonality so many times from hilarious to haunting. And moved me in a way that nothing else did. I'm enjoying this, and then all of a sudden, oh my God, she's dead, and then that happens, and then I've walked out of that going, nothing like mixed it up in a Cuisinart for me more than that film, and for that reason, I think it deserves number one. One thing we didn't mention is that they're hiding, and she's amazing.
She's great.
The actress's name.
Yeah. Thomason something.
Yeah.
Thomas McKenzie?
Yeah, McKenzie. Mm-hmm. I think that
she's a Jewish girl hiding in the house.
Yeah. And, you know, all the performances are great, including little Archie Fuller, who we met at
who's
the
now
Fox Searchlight.
Getting a lot of flack that they're remaking Home Alone, and he's cast as the... did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
He's going to be the new Macaulay Culkin character.
That's my number one. Cool.
That's my number one.
It's on my top 10 list.
What's your number one?
That just leaves your number one.
I said Marriage
Story. Marriage Story. Wow, did we really get through it in less than 2.5 hours? We were shorter than The Irishman. But not by much.
Any honorable mentions anybody want to mention?
No, I think we've
best
done that
of the decade. You got
no, there's
the,
no decades. We can do that. Let's save that
Actually,
for another show.
I have an honorable mention that's out of the blue.
Okay.
And I don't think either of you guys saw it. And only because it was cheap and it's a comedy and it's a little breath of fresh air. And that was Good Boys.
Oh, yeah. You know, I never saw that.
Yeah. Check it
I
out.
Never saw Good Boys.
I know. That's with it's another coming of age.
It's another, hey, let's get and stoned and have
kids?
A big
produced
party.
By, and, is it's Seth Rogen and, I mean, Jonah Hill and,
and the kid who was in
Evan
the room.
Goldberg, I guess. Is
Yeah, and Jason Tremblay's in it.
Right.
Yeah, and it
Jason
was fun.
Jason Tremblay.
It was fun. It
kid
was,
from The Room.
Yeah, it was another variation on a common theme, but it was good.
That's on my list of got to get to, but there are so many things that I'll just mention before we go a couple of things that I've heard great things about. Last Black Man in San Francisco I have not seen. A Portrait of a Woman on Fire I did not see. And I haven't seen Waves, and we mentioned in the show I haven't seen Just Mercy, and I also did not see Clemency. So those are movies that are getting talked about, and I am...
Well, I would say also on my worst list would be Ad Astra, which is a Brad...
Oh, no, that's a fine movie. It's slow, but it doesn't belong in anybody's...
I would also say
doesn't belong in anybody's
back
worst
to the television world, I'd say the last season three of The Handmaid's Tale is just so terrible for... And it hurts me more when there's a great show... If something's just bad from the start, okay, it's just bad. But when you have something that's just brilliant and it just becomes awful.
On the other hand, the third season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel
is
great.
It's great. Yeah. They jumped the shark and jumped back. Season two, jumped the shark, and now they're back and they're terrific again.
Hey, we jump the shark every week
because
we watch the bad movies so you don't
have to. That's right. And
happy holidays, and in 2020 we will have clear vision.
That's
How about
right.
that? Get
maybe,
it?
Maybe we will
vision.
Do a show on the best of the decade. There's something to think about.
Yeah.
Long 10 years.
Time. Maybe we will. Anyway, you can reach me on Twitter at Neil Rosen Apples.
I'm at Bill McCuddy on Twitter.
And Bill Bergoli.
You know that because you're already yelling at me.
On Instagram.
Instagram.
At Bill Bergoli.
Wave of the future.
And thanks for sitting around talking movies
all the kids
with us.
Doing.
Happy holidays, everybody. And we'll sit around talking movies again with you in 2020.